The unit we began last week was about mitzvos. And we had a very interesting short piece, which was called Mitzvah Achas, which Revolvi spoke about both the opportunity, the power, but also the challenge of even doing one mitzvah, but doing it really with all of our kochos, emotional, spiritual, etc. And the perspective, just to reframe, because it'll be a good segue for today's shiur, in essence, Revolvi basically presented us the one question that leads to all others, which was, how do you view mitzvos? Are they an opportunity or are they a burden? 613 things you got to do, or certain 613 things you get to do? Or as I put it, are you a taxpayer Jew? Oy, Nebuch, I have to pay my taxes? I will, of course. Chas v'shalom, I would never cheat. Who would cheat on their taxes? But I'm not looking forward to it, and if a good accountant could get me out of something, I'd be very appreciative. If the rabbi could find me a kula, that'd be great. That's one way of looking at mitzvos. Or do we look at it as a great opportunity? And we ended last week's shir with the famous Rambam in the Perashat Mishnayos. The Rambam said the reason there are so many mitzvos is not to burden us. On the contrary, because Hashem knows that everyone has different talents and different strengths and different interests. And in theory, says the Rambam, this is an amazing Rambam. It's not some obscure Hasidic Rebbe. This is the Rambam says, in theory, if you would do even one mitzvah, but do it completely and perfectly correct, that alone will we be worthy of meriting Olam Haba. Since we never know if we're going to do that one, we got a lot, and we got to try to do all of them, so hopefully at least we can hit one in the bullseye. Okay, that was last week's shir, all about what he called mitzvah achas. So now, in a certain sense, he's doing the flip side of the coin. Perek Shvi is entitled, not one mitzvah, but Taryag mitzvah, 613 mitzvahs. But yet, despite the multiplicity and the expansion in quantitative terms, on a qualitative level, you'll see there's a certain similarity, and that's exactly going to be his point. So let's begin. Kol Taryag mitzvos, mitzvah achas hein. We don't have to wait long to see the overlap. And this is the thesis of this short chapter, that we have to view 613 mitzvos not as 613 completely distinct worlds into themselves, but 613 interconnected pieces that make up one unified whole. After all, he says, referring to the Torah and to all the mitzvos, what do we say? Kihem chayenu, they are our life. Says Rav Volpe, you say that all the time, you sing it every whatever. You ever think about what that means? If they, meaning they, what's they? They is the mitzvos. If they are our life, hachayim, eino mechalkim, is life divided up? You have one life. There are areas of our life, there's time periods in our life, but we have only one life. It is one unified thing. It's not multiple lives. Says Revolvi, achayim eino mechalkim le'evarim. We don't look at different parts of our body or different sections of our life. Rather, kol haguvhu, organism, echad. Hanoseat achayim. We view all of it as one interconnected thing, right? The hip bone is connected to the knee bone, which is connected to the thigh bone. It's all connected. It's all interconnected. And as we know, and this is certainly true as you get older, right? One little thing goes wrong or hurts in one place. All of a sudden, it cascades and impacts in ways that we never would have thought, in areas we never would have thought. Because really, everything is interconnected. So too, says Rav Volpe, and this is really a very fascinating chiddush. Kach kol ha-mitzvos biyachad hein chayenu. You have to realize, in ways that we can't always understand, just like we don't always understand our biological body, even if we don't understand it and see it always, all of the mitzvos, all 613 components, are really combined to make one unified whole. For example, he says, and he takes a drastic example just to illustrate. Im yishalu adam, ma koev lo yoter. If you would ask a person, right, a horrible Sophie's Choice kind of question, what would you prefer? What would hurt you more? Kishi yoridu lo tziporin, o kishi yitzu lo ayin, o kishi yituchu bibit no. You have a choice. I could either, you know, like Chinese torture, rip off one of your fingernails, or I could take out one of your eyes, or I could cut you open, you know, in your stomach, in your gut. Which one would you like? So what's the real answer? Says Rav Volpe, obviously. Lo yiratzu b'shum ofen l'shar eiza ke'ev yoter nocha. You don't want any of them. No one's going to start thinking, well, you know, this is only going to hurt for this much, and this is going to hurt me. You really don't want any of them. They're all horrific pain. On some objective, if you were looking at someone else's life, you could, so to speak, say, well, you know, that was going to hurt more, that was going to be more damaging. But if I were to put the question to you, you know, your actual, real, truthful answer would be none of the above. You don't want to start cheshbening the detail. Well, maybe this is a little bit more, this is a little less. It's all the same. You wouldn't want any of it. You wouldn't want to say, since ripping off my fingernail will be the least, I'll take that. You don't really want anything. After all, he says, if that's true about the eye, which in theory you could live without, kol shekein, obviously you could live without your fingernail, and nevertheless, ubechol zos, ke'ev nitilaso gadol minaso, but the pain of the actual removal would be beyond what we could comprehend. And why? Why is even something as small as ripping off a finger and ripping off a toenail? Again, they do this in torture. If my world of fiction bakias is enough. Thank God I have no non-fiction knowledge of this. But I believe it's true. When you read a book and you see a movie, it's obviously all true. Come on, right? So, why is it? Why is it that you can't even imagine that pain? Ki aguf hachai margish ke'ev lo yishuar b'ha'eder mimenu afilu davar tafa. So whatever the chemical or the biological reason is, on a deeper level, says Rav Obi, because your whole body radiates the pain of even one little part. Because it's all interconnected. I had that just this week, and it's a very small example, but I think we've all had this. This happens a lot with teeth, right? Like I went to the dentist. I said, you know, something's bothering me on this side. But I actually thought I had more than one problem. But the truth is, I thankfully only had one. Because when you have one, if you have like a nerve or something exposed, right, the pain radiates in multiple places. Right? So that's a small little example. You know, I really, aside from the fact that the x-ray confirmed that there's only one thing to take care of, they only did one filling, and now all of a sudden nothing else in my mouth hurts. It's actually fascinating. Now that it's over, I can say it was fascinating. It was not fascinating at the time. But in a bigger deal, says Rav Obi, in the more extreme examples, the examples he just mentioned. Second paragraph, and of course here is the obvious and important nimshel. Kach HaTorah. This is what it means in our religious life as well. There is a mirror image between the spiritual and the physical. HaTorah Eino Magdila Bein Mitzvos Kalos V'Chamurot U'Bein Sugei HaMitzvos HaShonos. We don't just say, well, that's an eye versus a fingernail. We don't want any of them removed. They're all going to hurt. They all would leave permanent damage. So too, we don't really objectively distinguish between different types of mitzvos. Kol HaMitzvos B'Yachad Hein Organism Ruchani Chai. What a beautiful line. All the mitzvos together as a unit form one living organism. U'B'Ha'eder Mitzvah Kal Achas. And if you remove even one of them, even the quote-unquote smallest one, Chisaron umum hu v'tzurasu haruchanit shel adam. That will permanently distort and deform, maybe subtly, maybe only subtly, but nevertheless, it will distort and deform the entire spiritual form of the person. He continues now by quoting a very beautiful, similar idea from the Mesil Sisharim. Third paragraph. Yedua, this is a quote from the Mesil Sisharim. Yedua, ki ein tachlis magia Ela mikoach kibutz kol emtsaim asher nimsu v'ashimshu asher shimshu lahagio. Right. This is like if you have to get like an industrial, you know, engineer or a systems analyst. I assume they would confirm this. He says you have to understand. He says if you do it, everyone knows, even in, you know, in a secular sense, that you can't achieve a desired goal or purpose other than by what? By bringing together, unifying, bringing together all the various necessary components, which each one has their certain role to play to reach that point. Ukafia koach ha'emtzayim v'shimusham, and to the extent that you have the right tools in place and you use them in the most effective way, kein tiatach l'shanolam mehem, that will, in direct proportion, result to a good outcome. And finishes and concludes Emsil Sisharim. Similarly, the kol hefresh even katan, shiyimatzev emtzim. And if you deviate even a little bit from having either the right, you know, you have most of the right ingredients, but you're missing one. Or you have all the right ingredients, but you use the wrong proportion or the wrong amount of one. Tibachein toldato bebirur vadai, begia zmantachas hanolem mekibutz kulam. When you put it all together, it might look right, but the result is going to be just off. And how much off? In proportion to how much you were either missing or had the ratios off, right? Mesil Sisharim, Perek Aleph. Right, again, you can imagine a complex project with 20 different employees, a complex recipe for a particular dish, right? You know all the ingredients. It will, the extent that you get what you want will be dependent on if you have good quality ingredients and if you use them in the right way. We know this in advance. And if you miss even one of them, the whole thing gets thrown off. Hari Yesh Mitzvah, so too, he says. Yesh Mitzvah, Ben Adam L'Makom, lost the place, I'm sorry. Ubein Adam L'Chavero. He's going to go through various different kind of dualisms, different examples. On the one hand, we like to distinguish between interpersonal mitzvahs and those related to us and Hashem. Yes, but doesn't really matter. Kashtein Gam Yachad, Mevius L'Dei Shlemus. But in the end of the day, you need both to achieve Shlemus. Similarly, we have Chovos HaLevavos, things that are emotional or belief-oriented, midos. But there's also chevos ha'avarim. There's physical things, concrete things we have to do. It's true. On the one hand, that's a distinction. On the other hand, it's irrelevant for the ultimate goal. Because shtein gam yachad. Mashlim osa tzelma kim. You need both to truly perfect yourself. Similarly, we have mitzvahs which are time-dependent. You know, there's going to be a yontif mitzvah. There's a this mitzvah, that mitzvah, the morning mitzvah, the night mitzvah. And there's other mitzvahs which are timidios. You have to do them all the time. And again, it's a distinction, but without a difference, ultimately. Shtein gam yachad. Maybe it's l'chayin netzach. If you ultimately want to achieve the desired result and get to the right end game of olam haba, you need both. Similarly, there's mitzvahs kalos and chamuros. We have things which are more severe and things which are a little bit more less severe. But it doesn't matter, because shtein gam yachad, you need them all. If you want to general, truly develop yourself, you need to have all of them. To take out even one little ingredient, again, it would be like, again, the first paragraph, the metaphor would have been removing a toenail, which would not be pleasant and could kind of affect you anyway. Or, as we say, if you're in some complex project with 20 different people in different divisions, and everyone's working on their part of the whatever, you miss even one little piece, it doesn't matter which one. Yes, it's true. If we're as an analyst, we can put things in boxes. But I'm lamakam, but I'm lachavero, this is man-oriented. But in the end, in terms of the desired result, each one has a role to play, and none of them can be removed or ignored without having a negative impact. Ein haTorah mavdila ben sugei mitzvos. Ultimately, we don't really distinguish between types of mitzvos. Ha'adam, here's really some important muster now for the next few paragraphs. This is really key. I think it's obvious once he says it, but it's important that he says it, and it's important for us to think about. Ha'adam, bal hanetios. We have inclinations. Everybody has their inclination, the thing which draws them, and there are other things that interest them less, tempt them less, or they feel less at home at. This is so obvious once he says it, but we're not always aware of it ourselves. Each person is more naturally drawn to the mitzvah which corresponds to their natural personality. Right? You ever think about it, whether it's for yourself, sometimes it's our children, you know? This child, oh yeah, davening, he loved to come to davening, whatever. And this other child can't sit for a second. Oh, but that other child loves learning. That other child wants to volunteer all the time at Shalva. And for ourselves, of course, same thing. Why? Because we have different personalities, different nitiyot, and each person is more drawn to the mitzvos which correspond to their, you know, it's very simple. Like everything else in life, we take the path of least resistance. The mitzvah that's easier for us and that speaks to us and makes us feel good is one we're more likely to do. And he gives examples which are obvious. Again, this is part of the beauty of the Sefer. It's so down to earth. A person who's a social person. Right? Some people are outgoing. They're people, you know, I'm a people person. So that kind of person is going to be more likely to emphasize mitzvah chesed, v'avas abrios. He's going to do chesed, he's going to hang out with people. And it could be that for that person, mitzvah ben ha'makom, umadaktek b'chos. But to have kavanah and davening is going to be, in his mind, is going to seem less important. Because that doesn't really speak to him. Because that's his nature is not really pushing him to fulfill it in the same way that it is pushing him to do chesed and the like. And then there are other people who are completely different. Yesh asher nafsho soledes milo sochal nevela. And yet, piv mitka'el b'shkar merachilus. Right? There are other people who, on the one hand, I would never put treif in my mouth. But there's treif coming out of my mouth all the time. Right? Why? Because for whatever reason, the way that person's tunat nefesh is, his personality is, this appeals to him, this doesn't so much appeal to him. Ratzon haTorah masigim rak ayde shmiras kol hamitzvos ofen shaveh. But if you take a step back, we have to be aware of the obvious and clear truth, which is if you want to get the desired result, right? Sometimes, and I'm extrapolating from what he's saying, but I think this is really on point. Sometimes we ourselves, and certainly people we know, we are children or students, etc. But I think if being honest, we've had this experience in our lives. We ourselves are frustrated. Why aren't we feeling, or why aren't we at a place which should be that desire? I'm doing all the right things, I'm a firm guy, I do this and that, and yet how come I don't feel it's not harmonious, it's not going easily and smoothly, whatever it is that, you know, once upon a time the Rebbe said, you know, how come, and the answer is I can't really know about everybody, I don't even know if I know about myself, really. But I think what he's getting at is the point, which is that at the end of the day, even if we're doing a lot of things, and we all do a lot of good things, this is the point. At the end of the day, since the whole it's intended to be a system, on the one hand, the system are 13 pieces, but on the other hand, it's really all one system. And if we're not doing all of the parts, and all of them well, not just the ones that we like, but the ones that we're doing all of them well, then enechrami, the result is not going to be exactly the same. You put together a complex, it could be a computer, you know, some people go with their hands, I am not, but you put together a computer, you know, some people like to, you know, buy an old computer and take it together and get a part, right? But if you don't put it, you have all the right pieces, but if you don't put them all, sometimes you leave out a piece, right? Anytime I've ever bought anything, you had to build, you know, those bookcases, I couldn't handle that, kind of started around the time I got married. You know, I was one of the people that was not so excited that they came to Beit Shemesh. Like, what's it going to do for me? I can't build anything anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, you get, you know, one of these bookcases. We're getting night tables. I remember when we got married, the night tables. My wife looking at me, my husband, my man, you can build a night table, can't you? Look, it even comes with instructions. I'm like, yeah, there's three pictures. Whatever I would be done, they're missing a piece. No, they're not missing a piece. Call you, my brother-in-law would come over, 2 seconds. Or my father-in-law, even worse. He'd build it in a second. Excellent with his hands, right? So if you don't have all the pieces and you don't know exactly how in the right way, you don't have that shlemus. That, and again, we're all prone to this because we're all dafka attracted to different things. But that's a mistake. Dafka zosi avoda. And therefore, this is maybe the most important line of the whole piece. What is our avoda really? Lizkor v'lasos es kol ha-mitzvos ba'oso dikto u'ba'oso simas aleinu. To try to focus on all mitzvos with the same level of care and the same level of attention. Ein laleches acharei netiot ishiot v'mitzvot. And not to just go after what we enjoy better. I think this is, you know, really, really profound, because when we think of when we talk about someone's desire or inclination, we're usually using it in the context of towards an aveira. Overcome your desire, because, you know, the Torah says don't do that or don't whatever. Here he's pointing out, not that that's not true, that is of course true, but here he's pointing out something much more subtle and therefore much more profound, which is even when we're doing the right thing, if we're not self-aware about our own, sometimes even subconscious, drives and inclinations, we don't even realize why we're putting more emphasis or being more successful in one mitzvah instead of another. So it really requires, like, you know, really, you know, I think I've said this, maybe, I think it's in this context. I said this to my Talmidim in other contexts. You know, very often the word Musr gets a bad rap. People just think it means, you know, fire and brimstone, you did something wrong. I tell them all the time, to me, you could find books that talk that way, you could find rabbis that talk that way, and I'll be honest, those books and those rabbis don't speak to me either. Never did. But what I think, there are a lot of Musr, whether it's individuals or Sfarim, which are not that at all, but rather what they really are, Musr done well, is self-reflection. That's my definition of Musr. Anything that gets us to think a little bit more deeply about who we are and why we're doing what we're doing and how we could be better. What's so bad about that? When there used to be a thing called Barnes & Noble bookstores, you know, brick and mortar used to be a thing, all the way back like 10 years ago, you know, before when extinct with like the dinosaurs. So you have humongous sections, you know, of self-help books, right? If they call it Musr, no one would buy them because they came up with a new name called self-help. And some of them are also shtick. But like the ones that are actually good with real substance, that's what real good Musr is. And that's exactly what this paragraph, that's what the whole chapter is. We have to be self-aware, think about it, each of us have to understand ourselves better, what are our natiyas and what is driving us, etc. And now we're going to conclude with one last paragraph. We're mamash on schedule, wow. I have to do something about that. It's not our minog. Ish imo v'aviv tiro. The famous pasuk, but mora, you have to have awe or fear of our parents. So Rashi, as he's quoting here, Rashi, which is Chazal, how come in that pasuk, imo, mom, comes first? Kan hiktim em lav, even though we know that in the Aseret HaDibros, by kavod esavicha esimecha, right, dad comes first. So what's the famous teaching? V'shegoli lefonav shaben yarei es aviv yosir mi imo. U'bekovod hiktim av le'em, shegoli lefonav shaben mechavod es imo yosir mi aviv, lefisha shadlaso bidvarim. So very famous Rashi, that a person is naturally more in awe or fearful of his father, and therefore to counteract that, the Torah puts mom first. Don't think it's enough to only fear your dad, you also have to have that fear for your mom. And when it comes to kabed, which here is translated by Chazal as something very bordering on love. It doesn't, Chazal never used the word love. That's a whole sugya in itself. I have given a shir about that, whether there's a mitzvah to love your parents or not. That is not an obvious question, and there are actually contradictions in Makoros. But here, this Rashi, and this Chazal, definitely describe kabe, something very, very close to love. And therefore it says, naturally, a person is more drawn to their mother, because their moms, especially when they're younger, is the one who's spending more time with them and taking care of them. And therefore, dafka in that context, when you're more likely instinctively towards your mother, dafka there, it says, avicha first. And there's in both cases, it's a foil. And it's a mirror. In both cases, whatever you're naturally drawn to, dafka, the Torah picked the other one to emphasize. So, again, I think probably all of us already knew that Rashi, but here it took Rav Olbia just to point out, or if we have the perspective of this chapter, it's so powerful. Hare shemitzvah harishona, shahayelen minchanech lekaima, the very first mitzvah, right? Even before the child knows what's going on, the parents are telling him to do things, and subconsciously and otherwise, raising him in a way that hopefully he's respecting and loving and fearing his parents. The very first mitzvah from the child so young, doreshet miadam lebal yitchashev min etziso hativit. What a powerful idea. It says, the entire thesis of this chapter, the paradigm of it all, is the mitzvah of kibud avim. In that very single mitzvah, we see the Torah doing what he's saying we have to do for all mitzvahs. Be aware of your natural instinct. In Mora, it's more to your father, and Kibbutz, it's more to your mother. And therefore, go out of your way not to say, well, that's why, right? This is the most classic, lazy excuse that we all give. But that's not me. I'm more this. Just because it's more it's a natural instinct. Just because something's a natural instinct doesn't make it legitimate. That's a very secular perspective. That's not a hedonistic perspective. That's not a Torah perspective. Sometimes our natural instincts are good. Run with them. But just because it's a natural, adarava, sometimes natural instincts are what we have to overcome. So exactly what he's been saying about all of Torah. Be aware, you're more of a tzedakah guy? Great, do lots of tzedakah. But you have to work on yourself for davening and learning, etc., etc. Oh, you're more of an intellectual learning person, you love that? So work on yourself for chesed. Whatever the case may be. So that whole idea of trying to overcome our natural instincts and therefore try to observe all the mitzvos with equal fervor and care, that's exactly what happens even within the micro example of Kibud av aim. And therefore, as he said, it's a binyan av. It's a paradigm for all mitzvos. So let's just skip to the last lines of the whole thing. With this, we conclude. And this is how he sums up the last two chapters, last week and this week. What is our approach to all mitzvos? On the one hand, hadiktuk ba mitzvah achas, b'li lahakel u'b'li lahachmir. On the one hand, as we saw last week, every single mitzvah, you can't just do mitzvahs flippantly, haphazardly. Every mitzvah demands so much intellectually, spiritually, emotionally, sometimes even physically. We have to put all of our kochos even into a single mitzvah. And at the same time, sima slave l'kayim kol ha-mitzvos, kulon, b'lila hadif achas al chavrta shlo kedin. But to realize that from the other perspective, all 613 are one indivisible unit which only works ideally when it's working in harmony with each other, with itself. And therefore you can't only do one mitzvah or the other, you have to try to treat all of them as that single mitzvah. Demanding to be sure, but at least now we know what we need to do. All right, good Shabbos and good Yom Tov.